Connecting commerce to your community. Bridgeport Regional Business Council President and CEO Dan Onofrio is on the Lissa in the Morning on WICC 600.
Oh, yeah. I forgot to tell you, Dan. Merry early Christmas. I got you kind of an intro every time you come on the air now. So there you go. Now you're really officially stuck with me.
I feel so special. Thank you.
Oh, you are. You are so special. So thank you so much for coming back again, as you always do every week. Well, we have a lot to dive into. First and foremost, this stimulus package that the president is not signing, might I add, at least not yet. He's asking for Congress to come back and bring up that, bump up that amount from $600 to $2,000 at least. First of all, if we do see a stimulus package, you know, what are you guys kind of looking at with this money and what this is going to mean, the PPP loans, all of that?
Right. Yeah, there's a lot to unpack in this particular package. We had Congressman Himes on yesterday. And, you know, on the surface here, you know, if it goes through as it is, you know, there will be stimulus, as you mentioned, you know, $600 per individual, you know, and it's going to mirror the same kind of requirements, eligibility requirements as the first round. So you can expect that same process. It's just, I guess, you know, they're debating the dollar amounts. But as it relates for businesses specifically, they are going to be reopening the PPP program. I think they've allocated in this particular bill, the version that they're talking about now, up to almost $285 billion in funding for PPP. And they're really targeting the smaller businesses, so it's a little bit different from the last round. For instance, the eligible businesses under this particular program must have 300 or fewer employees, which is down from the 500 from the first round.
Mm-hmm.
And then they also need to demonstrate a 25% reduction in gross revenues, pick one quarter from 2019 to a comparable quarter in 2020. And then in addition, the loans are going to be capped out at up to $2 million, which again is down from the first round, which was $5 million. And I think the deal there is they just want to avoid the, you know, the larger organizations that qualified and got, you know, millions of dollars. They want to try to avoid
yes.
that this go around.
I'm glad that they are. I mean, I can remember specifically, I'm not going to call out who, but I've talked to a couple of small business owners who specifically brought exactly that up, Dan, that, you know, there are corporations that were bringing, you know, buying new cars and doing, you know, with their stimulus money because they didn't really need the money. So I'm glad that they made adjustments to that. I continue to kind of voice on here. I'm surprised they didn't make adjustments to the individuals who bring home money, the $600 stipends, because again, it's, you know, $600 and then it's $600 for every independent who lives in that household. And, you know, and some people are going to walk away with $1,200, $2,400, you know, dollars who didn't lose their jobs. Like, I, you know, that's the only thing that I'm very surprised that we didn't really adjust that end of it, because there are people who have the same income, more or less, or at least have their same jobs that they did this time, you know, in the beginning of the pandemic. And they're still making money when there are people who are literally a month or two away from, you know, walking away from their businesses. So that's the thing that I'm kind of tripped up on. But I'm glad, at least for the PPP loans, that was addressed this time around. So that's definitely a good thing.
Yeah, and going back to the stimulus dollars,
yeah.
They are targeting, you know, they are trying to target the lower to middle income folks. So on an individual basis, if their salary is less than $75,000 a year, and as a combined joint filing, it has to be $150,000 or less. But you're right, you're spot on in terms of you know, the thought process behind that.
Yeah, because I'm just thinking, Dan, like if you're basing it off of 2019 tax returns. I mean, that's a whole different there. Like I look at, there are some businesses that actually did really well in the pandemic. I it's kind of weird to say that, but there are some people who did perfectly fine in the pandemic. If not, they thrived because of the pandemic and because their tax returns might be under $150,000. But now maybe they're not. They are going to qualify for that money. So, I mean, it's not a huge amount, but I do think when you add that up, that could be $600, $1,200, $2,400 going to a business that could last for another couple of months. That's all I'm saying. But, I mean.
No, you're right. And I know that's the sentiment, you know, that's been debated and talked about for sure. The other thing I do want to mention real quick on the PPP before we move out off this topic. This particular bill, the way it's drafted right now, does expand the eligibility requirements for restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
So restaurants specifically now can apply 3.5 times the payroll, so 1 month of their payroll, 3.5 times, which is up from the 2.5 from the last go around.
Okay.
And that's pretty significant, I think, particularly for the restaurants. And then finally, the other thing I just want to mention is the whole Save Our Stages legislation. That is also included in this particular bill. And that's significant, at least for us in the greater Bridgeport region. You know, we have places like the Bijou Theater, mm-hmm. and the Downtown Cabaret, and those folks. And, you know, they've been closed. They've been shuttered. So the fact that they're getting some allocation out of this bill, I want to say it creates $15 billion for these type of venues, an opportunity for them to access. So, you know, significant stimulus in here for both individuals and businesses.
And I'm glad you brought that up, Dan, because I do find more times than none, a lot of times the arts or the theater is looked at as something that's kind of excess. It's something that is not necessarily per se. But I would argue with people that, you know, these are still economy builders. These are still people's incomes that have not been coming in for 10 months. These are still people out of jobs. These are still rents that have to be paid. So every time people think like, oh, well, the theater, that's not really something that you need per se. Well, you're right. But neither are bars and neither are restaurants. You know, like you could definitely categorize them in the same spot. Because they're just as much struggling, if not a little bit more than restaurants, because they, in many capacities, haven't been able to actually put on a show for 10 months now. And it's not just the actors. It's the people who run the theater. It's also, like I said, you're paying rents. There's a lot behind it. And I just want people to really realize that, you know, when we give money to the arts, if you will, like if we allocate money to the theaters, it's bigger than just, oh, well, you know, now they could put on a show. No, it's much, much bigger than that.
Oh, clearly. And think of the ripple effect it has on the economy. So if you look again at Bridgeport specifically, you know, with the arena, the new amphitheater coming, and I mentioned the other venues like the Klein Memorial, you know, people go and frequent them. Before a show, they're going out to dinner and they're grabbing a drink and, you know, they're meeting up somewhere, and maybe after the show they're going someplace else. And, you know, we see it in downtown Main Street in Bridgeport with the arena being closed. There's several venues there or restaurants that have closed. You know, they're not seeing the families coming in for a burger mm-hmm. before a hockey game. You know, there is a ripple effect with these venues being shuttered right now.
Dan Onofrio, who is with the Bridgeport Regional Business Council, and we're talking now about the recent money that the state allocated for restaurants. Dan, we know that restaurants, the Connecticut Restaurant Association specifically, had said, look, if we don't see things turn around in the next 6 months, we're going to lose 47% of our local restaurants, which is huge in Connecticut. What is this money looking like now that the state has put forward for restaurants?
Yeah, so earlier this week, they announced the business recovery grants that are going to be specific for restaurants, bars, food service, you know, some lodging and entertainment, recreation businesses that fall into the hardest hit small to mid-sized of those industries there. They allocated $35 million, and it's significant, and they're looking at it as somewhat of a bridge to the new stimulus package. Grant sizes are going to range from $10,000 to $30,000. They're looking at a pool of, I think, up to 2,000 businesses that they're going to go through. Now, some of the questions that we've been getting related to this is, you know, what do the restaurants need to do to apply for this? And there really is no application process. DECD, the Department of Economic and Community Development, they're going to finalize the pool of recipients, and based on the defined criteria and the DRS data, they're going to start distributing these funds. And what they're saying is you can expect the week of December 28th, which would be next week, checks would be out, because I think they need to get some of these dollars out before the end of the calendar year, similar to that $5,000 program they released in November, that they're looking to get rid of this money before the end of the calendar year.
Okay, so it sounds like you were saying, and correct me if I'm wrong, as far as applications are concerned, you know, they essentially don't really exist. Like, there's not really, you know, certain requirements.
There is no specific application for the restaurants or anyone to apply for.
Okay.
So DECD is looking at the pool of businesses. I want to say they mentioned 1,500 to 2,000 businesses that fall into this category. And based on the criteria that DECD is using with DRS, they're going to allocate those funds, that $35 billion, to those businesses.
When do you think they'll start seeing that money, and how much money can they make?
So again, the grant sizes will be between $10,000 and $30,000.
Okay.
So you're in a range between that range, and I believe they're looking to get these funds out the door by the end of the calendar year.
Wow. Okay, so they could be out as soon as, you know, next week.
Yeah, they're saying that they're going to start December 28th. So
Wow. We'll
see.
Okay. Dan Onofrio is here. And Dan, I know this was something that Paul Pacelli was irate. He's still very upset about it. The gas tax. A lot of people were pretty shocked, especially because Governor Lamont had said in the beginning of last year that he had no plans in adjusting our gas tax. But now he's all for it because of climate change. Your thoughts on it?
So it's specifically the way it's been drafted here is it's a transportation and climate initiative program. And you know, there is a difference between the gas tax as we have known it compared to this is, you know, the gas tax, as we recall, you know, those dollars went into the general fund and obviously it could be spent on anything. And that's, I think, been the problem that we've experienced here in the state of Connecticut. The difference with this is, you know, these dollars are going to be allocated very specifically to, you know, our carbon footprint, reducing, our emissions and things of that nature, and also allow an opportunity to target these dollars or allocate these dollars specific to transportation improvements. It remains to be seen how this all shakes out, but it's significant in the sense that we all can agree, I believe, that we need infrastructure changes and improvements on our transportation network. I think we spoke loud and clear that we weren't in favor of taxes last year. So they're trying to get creative in ways to find dollars, much needed dollars, to help improve not just our carbon footprint, but also improvement in transportation. So, that's, I think, the main difference between, you know, the gas tax versus this TCI carbon system that they're going to be using.
Yeah, I think it's just unfortunate that we've coined the term gas tax and immediately people go to what a gas tax typically is. So I think you're right in even just kind of differentiating the two things. And Dan, unfortunately, because I had some tech issues over here, I'm so sorry to cut you loose, but I hope you have a very Merry Christmas with your beautiful family, and I look forward to talking to you next week. Are you going to come on, or do you have vacation time?
Well, I'll come on. If you're there, I'm there.
Oh, I'm here. I can't go anywhere. So I'll be here, my friend. Thank you so much, and have a wonderful holiday.
You as well, Melissa. Take care.
It's time to go beyond the classroom and check in with the Discovery Museum. It's science you may not know on WICC 600.
So, David Mestre, I did everything you told me to do. I went, I found my parents have a treehouse in their backyard, so I climbed it. I checked to make sure it was facing southwest. I took my kid with me, I took my mother with me, and we stood up there right at 4:45. We waited till about 5:15. And we didn't see any dang Christmas star. We didn't see anything. I was bummed. I know. Well, why did you see it?
Connecticut. I did not. No, it was. Yeah. There was a couple of reports that one of my friends over at the Westport Astronomical Society saw for like 5 minutes. There was like a little hole, and it was a real bummer. So we do have to wait another 800 years, unfortunately.
800 years. Okay, so just wake up and I'll just set my alarm. No worries.
There you go. Yes. Now, there is another alignment that might be kind of cool. And for this one, maybe you want to take a trip out, like maybe to a desert. You know, that might be better.
Okay.
September 8th, 2040. Mark your calendar right now.
You already know September 8th. Okay, September 8th, 2040.
It's actually going to be at sunset. Okay, so around sunset, this is going to happen.
Okay.
It's going to be a five-planet grouping. Mercury, Venus, Mars, Jupiter, and Saturn.
Wow.
All together in the sky.
Cool.
Big group. So it's not considered a conjunction. That's actually an astronomical term where they all have this very specific kind of an alignment. But it's darn near close enough where they're all very near each other that we call this sort of like a grouping. This will be fun.
Well, that's my I will be 50 years old at that point, and that's I can't think of a better birthday gift than to fly me out to the desert. So I will I'll put the bug in my husband's ear now to start planning for that. So there you go. Well, today, David, NASA just unveiled a new web portal to now allow the public to virtually examine space rocks like they never could before. Talk to us about this. This is pretty cool.
Yeah, this is a really exciting, opportunity for the public to actually get a chance to virtually hold samples in their hand. And so the story is that rocks kind of tell us a story. Rocks are storytellers, and they're also time travelers. And so scientists, when they look at a rock and examine and study it and look at all its minerals, can tell us a lot about the story of our solar system. So that's really the grandest story of all for us, how we got here, why the planets look the way they do. And it's the origin and evolution of our solar system as told through the rocks and the collections at NASA. And so these rocks come from many different sources. Some of the rocks were actually collected by astronauts, astronauts that landed on the moon. Some come from Antarctica. We found that rocks that land on Earth from space, which we call meteorites, look really well against a white background like the snow in Antarctica. So we actually go down to Antarctica with the teams, and we basically search around, and if we see like a little tiny speck against the white snow, that means that that speck wasn't there originally. It probably landed there from space.
Oh, cool, cool.
And so we find these. And then we also get our sample return missions, too. So they're collecting. A lot of these samples end up at Johnson Space Flight Center. And Johnson decided to do a project where they wanted to let you, the public, get a chance to examine these rocks the way that real scientists do. And so what they did was they created what are called research-grade 3D models of these rocks. And so they use very high-resolution cameras, and they take about at least 240 different pictures from different angles of this rock.
Wow.
And then what they do is they use an X-ray CT scan, and so they can actually create X-ray slices of these samples. So when you get to this portal, and the name of the portal is Astro Materials 3D Explorer, the Astro Materials 3D Explorer, when you get there, you will actually have these virtual tools to spin the rock around, get close to the rock, and then use an X-ray slicer to slice into the rock and actually see what's inside.
Wow, that's so cool. I have to imagine, like, this is this constantly being updated because there's always new rocks that come about?
Yeah. Well, it's actually a lot of it is just the rocks that we have in our collection. So,
cool.
It'll take a while just to get through all the rocks that we've got. So right now there are 10 lunar samples and 10 meteorites. And the lunar samples came from the Apollo program. And what's really cool is that when you start to study the moon rocks, it gives you some text and context that tells you a little bit about the rock itself, how we think it was formed. And then it's got a video showing the actual astronauts picking up the rock with the audio from Mission Control and the astronauts talking to each other as they're collecting the sample.
No way.
Yeah, it's
that's
really cool.
So amazing.
So you can hear Neil Armstrong, "Oh, I got the rock. It's in my hand."
That's crazy. That is so neat. I have goosebumps. That's so cool. So I know I'm going to get flooded with emails about this, David, because it's really, really neat. What is the website again? Where can people find it?
So it's a tricky little website to find because it's from the Johnson Space Flight Center. It's a .gov website. I would search for one word. It's called Astro Materials. Okay, Astro Materials. And it's 3D, the number 3, letter D, Explorer.
Okay.
So Astro Materials 3D Explorer.
Okay. I'm going to try Googling it right now just so I could tell people what that looks like. So you go to Google, you type in Astro, as in A-S-T-R-O, and then Materials, all one word you said, right?
Yep. So if you wanted to check out the website, it looks like it's Aries, A-R-E-S.
Oh, yep. It's the first one that pops up, aries.jsc.nasa.gov. Yep, and then you click on it. Oh, this is so cool.
That's really wild. Yeah. So it's Aries, A-R-E-S, .jsc for Johnson Space Flight Center, .nasa for the one and only NASA, and .gov for a government agency that explores space.
This is so cool.
Astro Materials, the number 3, and the letter D, Astro Materials 3D.
So, yeah, and when you get to this website, you'll see it breaks it up into the two categories. You've got the Apollo collection, the meteorite collection. Like, there's just so much to dive into. That is so cool.
Yeah,
so,
and they're hoping to add more, so keep an eye on this.
Wow.
And then what's really cool is that if you have, like an amazing screen. Like if you do this, you got to do this really on like a big computer screen, so mm-hmm. you can like really get the feel of it. If you happen to have like 3D glasses, like mm-hmm. those red and blue 3D glasses, they actually have little 3D pictures that you can actually see.
So oh,
you
cool! Can check oh, it I out. Love
so
that.
It's rich in so much information. And then if you really want to start diving into it, you can actually start to pin little virtual pins on features that you think are kind of cool, and then you can email that to one of the NASA scientists, and if they say, whoa, we never saw this before, it may trigger them to maybe examine it a little bit more carefully, because they have so many of these samples that
wow.
you know, no one scientist can look at all of them at the same time. So this is an opportunity for, yeah, you to discover something.
Love that. Well, thank you for sharing this with us, David. That's so cool, and especially if people are, you know, kind of maybe getting tired of the quarantine life. This is something that I feel like I would go down the rabbit hole with this one. I would end up on website for like 4 hours and say, oh, wait, did I eat lunch today? I can't even remember if I did that.
Melissa in the morning on WICC 600.
There he is, Mr. Ebenezer Scrooge. Say, is it getting cold around here?
It chills you to the bone.
But there's nothing in nature that freezes your heart like years of being alone.
It paints you with indifference like a lady paints with rouge.
And the worst of the worst,
the most hated and cursed,
is the one that we call Scrooge.
Unkind as any,
and the wrath of many,
this is Ebenezer Scrooge.
Oh, there goes Mr. Humbug, there goes Mr. Grimm. If they gave a prize for being mean, the winner would be him.
Okay, so you know who you are out there who have been messaging since hearing the weather forecast for tomorrow, that it's going to be rainy and 60 degrees. Come on. Don't be a Scrooge. Don't be like that. It's bizarre. It's bizarre to have summer weather on Christmas Eve going into Christmas Day. I'm sorry. It's bizarre. Okay. Everyone has a right to their opinion, and that's totally cool. But you know who you are, who I'm talking to right now, reaching out, telling me that this is a glorious forecast for Christmas Eve. Come on. Stop it. Cut it out. I mean, it's fine to not like snow. It's fine to not like, you know, the cold. Cool. Fine. That's totally fine. No one's forcing you to ski. But good Lord, Christmas Eve into Christmas Day, can we just get a little bit of magic? I mean, honestly. I think I'm going to do what like they do in Florida, which is make snope. You guys ever heard of snope? It's basically soap that you turn into snow. My younger brother is like basically all snoped out. Every time he goes to a Disney park or he goes out downtown or anything like that to go get his groceries or whatever he needs to get, run an errand, go to CVS, whatever, there are snope machines set up, like where they make fake snow in Florida, and they sing the song, "Let it snope, let it snope, let it snope." Yep, I'm not even making that up. That is totally true. So I'm thinking, you know, maybe if you're feeling like you're kind of gypped on the snow end of things and you don't feel like Scrooge, who you know who I'm talking to right now. Yes, you. I'm talking to you. Marino. If you don't feel like that and you're kind of feeling like sad that we're not going to wake up on Christmas morning and have snow on the ground, I totally get it. Maybe get a snope machine. That's what we're thinking of doing. I may get just some like fake, like, you know how you get the fake cobwebs for Halloween? I bet you it's like 1,000,000% off at this point if you want to go buy fake cobwebs and then make like a snow village in your house or something. If you've got grandkids or nieces or nephews, maybe I'll do that. That way you still get to keep your 60-degree weather. I get to keep my white Christmas. I think that's a good compromise. But Marino, you're still a Scrooge.